Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, the fattest, the drunkest of them all, our good pal BFD. How are you doing tonight, man?
Woo! Go Texans!
Yeah, did you know that your Houston Texans, not my Houston Texans, but your Houston Texans blew a 24-point lead?
Well, you know, not only did they blow a 24-point lead, they also lost by 20 points. They became the first team in NFL history to do that, Big Matt. That's special.
It was really special how they blew a 24-point lead in, I think, one quarter, just about.
Yeah, one like, quarter.
Or one half. And, you know, the Chiefs took the lead with they took the lead with 2:47 left in the game in the second quarter. They win touchdown, touchdown, fumble return, touchdown, touchdown. And that's how he ended up doing it. So it was very quick, it was very fast, and very sweaty, you know.
And very painful. I mean, wow. I've watched a lot of football. I say this all the time. I've watched a lot of football, but that was still something I'd never seen before. I'd never seen a swing that was that radical. When I wrote the write-up, that was kind of redundant. When I wrote the post-game for the game Sunday night, you know, I compared it to the 1993 Houston Oilers, you know, losing to the Buffalo Bills game. But still, we were up in, you know, in half, and then we fell apart. But we went up 24-0, and we're down 28-0 before the half, or 28-24 before the half ended. I mean, that was insane.
Yeah, and looking at it here, I guess that was kind of like, it took like 16 minutes for that to happen in this one. I feel like now that we can be blood brothers as a millennial and a Gen Xer, this loss really kind of bridged the gap between two generations, which I think was very beautiful for us as we continue to be Houston football fans. Because it's not Texans fans, we're Houston football fans, I guess, is a better way to say it. But yeah, I feel like we share a kinship now that we didn't feel before.
That's right, because that 1993, I mean, you weren't even born yet, right?
Yeah, I was born.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Liar.
Yeah. I was still breastfeeding, but also I was breastfed until I was 12 years old, you know. That's how I got so tall.
Right.
So in this game, the Texans up 24-0 and they proceeded to get outscored. This can't be right. 41-0 after that? That can't be right. There's no way. There's no way that's what happened.
But it's true.
They turned 24-0 into 41-24. I mean, like, I don't know. I think that's enough. I think we can end the show with that. But did you ever at one point think the Houston Texans are going to the AFC Championship game?
I never thought that. Never at any point, because it was so fluky. That was a big deal. And I, you know, it was, of course, you know, this is a big game. I have friends texting me during the game. And I had one friend that was texting me throughout the game, like every like 2 or 3 minutes. The Texans are going to lose this game. 2 or 3 minutes later, the Texans are going to lose this game. I mean, as Texans fans, we are pretty darn conditioned that we're going to lose games like this. But it was a simple fact that when we went up 24-0, it was fluky. It was really fluky. We had that good first drive. Beautiful, beautiful play design on the Kenny Stills touchdown. Absolutely beautiful play design. But then, you know, Casey had a couple of drops. And then there was the block punt, which we hadn't had a block punt for a touchdown in what, a decade or something silly like that. Then there was the muff fumble or the muff punt later on for the short field. And then we added on that really stupid field goal that every one of us was saying, go for it, go for the touchdown and don't kick the field goal. And well, I, you know, whatever about momentum, but at no point did I ever feel like we were going to win the game, because we're up 24-0, and there's, what, like 7 minutes left in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there was no confidence.
Yeah, I never felt – I felt like okay, even though they went down 28-24, because it's still Watson. It's like, And the Chiefs pass defense is great, but you know, it's not over yet. And that proceeded full into shambles. But yeah, I never felt like, oh wait, maybe I should look at tickets to go watch the Texans play the Titans next week in Houston or anything like that all whatsoever. It's like, yeah, this is still a very great pass defense, a transcendent quarterback, and most importantly, really bad pass defense too. So which play broke you in this game? Like, what was the play that happened where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we're totally effed. Like, that's it. There's no way they're going to win this one now.
The DeAndre Carter fumble. That was it. That was the one that turned me. It's like, we're done. And I had no hope after that fumble at all. All I could do was laugh. So every like hijinks that happened after that got LOLs instead of me throwing something.
Yeah. No, and that play too, and that one happened, I screamed. I was like, oh, no, what? I thought I was going to vomit whenever that one happened. And whenever they made it, you know, 24-21, I was like, all right, well, yeah, there goes kind of everything is how it was at that point.
We were done because the one thing we could not do is we could not take the foot off the gas, and Bill O'Brien immediately did that. So we're up 21-0. We had that short fourth down. It was a fourth and one. He butchers that entire sequence right there. He takes a timeout when he doesn't like the fourth and one play call, and then he kicks the field goal on fourth and one. He immediately took his foot off the gas at the first opportunity he could. And then even after they scored, it was a bunch of chums after that, right? We immediately started slamming it into reverse, and then it just let KC catch up with us. You cannot think that Carlos Hyde, you're going to ball your control your way against the Kansas City Chiefs when they can score in a minute and 30 seconds.
Yeah, and so you mentioned the field goal a few times. I hate that play call. You know, it's fourth and one. They had the ball at Kansas City's 10-yard line at that point. And the thing about it's like, okay, you invested what? If you include the stencil trade, you invested 3 first-round picks in your offensive line. You invested 3 second-round picks. You paid, you're paying Zach Fulton, you know, $6.5 billion a year as well, too. And you have fourth and inches right there at that point. You've been a ball control offense who's run the ball over and over and over again throughout the entire season. And you have fourth and one, and you're at Kansas City's 13-yard line. And they kicked the field goal there to make it, you know, 24-0, make it a pseudo 3-possession game, but it's pretty much a 4-possession game at that point. I hate the play call because you at least give Kansas City the ball at the 13. They have to, if they score, it's going to take them 87 yards, which takes time off the clock too. And maybe in the halftime, it's like 24-14 at the worst or whatever it is. So they kick the field goal, and then Carmack comes around right away. Mecole Hardman has the 58-yard field goal return. And then the crowd starts cheering, and you know Kansas City kind of feels like they're back into immediately at that point. So then following that play call was the fake punt, which came with the ball at their own.
God.
And this was Justin Reed carrying this fake punt as well too. But this came on fourth and four with the ball at their own 31-yard line. And the third and four play call was really weird too before that, because that was Watson and shotgun. Will Fuller split out left wide with a stack formation on the right, and they were running one route on that play. It was Fuller running an out route. Nobody else was running a route. Fells like chipped and went to the center of the field, but Watson had one throw on that play. And that's when my gripes to this offense is they have so many wasted routes where they get match up and we're isolating it to this side of the field and this is it. And Watson just threw the ball on the ground. That led to, you know, fourth and four and the fake punt. But you go from having a chance to go for it for 1 yard with your best players, with Deshaun Watson, a play that you probably have like a 9% chance of converting if you just sneak it even, and you don't get that. I wonder how much of the Bills game plays into that too, because they didn't convert that quarterback sneak. And then you turn back around using Justin Reed instead of Deshaun Watson on fourth and four with the ball at your own 31, try to convert instead. And then you just kind of give Kansas City a short field as well to get their 14, to get points number 14 as well. After that point too. So, I mean, I think they're both outrageously stupid. Horrendous play calls. And there's no, like, I saw some stuff online just like, well, maybe this is why it happened. It doesn't matter why it happened. There's no defending it. Bill O'Brien's still the head coach. He still has processes in place that leads to it. Even if the player's like, yeah, that's what the look we want, we're going to do it or whatever, or the special teams corps makes a decision, you still have this process in place and go ahead for it. and they were both outrageously dumb. But which decision you think was dumber in this game?
And just to be clear, what Matt's talking about is a lot of people are coming back and saying, well, Justin Reed should have optioned out of that. He should have called and said, no, we're not going to do this, or called a timeout. Or a lot of people are trying to put on Justin Reed instead of the guy who actually called the play. No, because Bill O'Brien's sitting there on the sideline, and he too can call the timeout. He too could get out of that play.
And he loves calling timeouts too.
Yeah, and wasting timeouts. He's really fond of wasting timeouts.
And that's a big thing too. I forgot to mention that about the 4th-and-1 was they called the timeout. They were going to go for it, call a timeout, kick the field goal. And I remember in the Slack, it was fun because we were so excited they were going for it there.
Right.
And then he's like, you dumb. Oh, you're the worst. I hate you so much.
Coward.
God, I hate you. Yeah. And then you call the timeout, you waste it there. And then you're in a situation where you're down 28-24 in the half, and you run out of timeouts to set a short field goal for Kymie Fairbairn, and now he's kicking a 51-yard field goal in the wind and the gray with his little gloves on, his fingers all cold, and he shanks it. You had 30 yards to the right trying to kick it really hard. And, like, I mean, just you wasted timeouts throughout the entire first half that, you know, took points away as well, too. Like, every timeout's important, and these decisions you think are, you know, meaningless, even if they don't end up affecting you in that game, there it's the same process decisions over and over again that affect you and take points off the board in the long run.
Well, it's not only the timeouts, it's the poor challenges. Like, it's all of it. There's like a big macro thing, because you make a poor challenge, you lose a timeout, I'm sorry. And that's what Bill O'Brien does best, is he really screws up the game clock, game management aspect of it, because, like, there's no reason to call. Look, I don't care. 4th-and-1, look, Deshaun doesn't know the play. Just sneak it.
Yeah, just run up and sneak it.
Yes, they clogged up the middle, fake the sneak, make a jump pass. Look, you can do things. Go schoolyard. Lots of things you can do. Don't blow the timeout. Don't kick the field goal. And that's what Bill O'Brien did.
Yeah, I need to go back and watch the film for that too, because I think they want to run their, you know, their quarterback power or their zone read, and they probably had, you know, two guys off each edge. And like, well, that takes away that play. We have no, you know, answers for it all whatsoever. But which decision do you think was worse, the fake punt or kicking the field goal on 4th-and-1?
The fake punt. If you're gonna go for it on 4th-and-4, I think it was 4th-and-4, right?
Yeah.
Go for it. Don't fake punt. Go for it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, they were sitting on it. I mean, Sorensen was sitting on the dadgum play because, hey, look, it's playoff time. Teams do weird things. They're gonna sit on things like that. And Justin Reed is not a running back. He's a safety. He had no moves. I have more moves than Justin Reed does. I at least have the hesitation move, and I'm 50 and no knees. So Justin Reed just ran into Sorensen, and that was it.
Yeah.
That was done.
Yeah, it was a very sad run. I didn't realize how sad the rushing attempt was until afterwards, too, for it. And, like, don't put Reed there in that situation. You can put somebody else there who has – put Tywan Jones there. I bet Jones gets the first down if he's there instead. That was also really fun about last week, too, about the post game. Or last week, at like the coverage of the game, somebody asked O'Brien about Tywan Jones. Like, oh, you know, we really liked him. He can do a lot of things. He had two catches the entire season. The Bills, the catch against the Bills, the catch against the Titans, and that sort of stuff always cracks me up. I hate the field goal more, but the punt was the worst decision, if that makes sense. Like, after the field goal, it's like you're just allowing them to come in. As far as a narrative perspective goes, I think it changed the entire game. The difference between 24 and 21, I'm sure, is like 2.5% win probability points compared to like 28 and 24. I bet it's probably worth, you know, 10% or something. They probably like a 95% win percentage chance of up 28-0 at that point in the game instead of 24-0. But yeah, I absolutely hated that though.
Yeah, and that's when you look at the win percentage throughout the game, that's when it all of a sudden, like, we peak, and then all of a sudden, right then, at that point in time, it goes, whoop.
Yeah, all the way down forever. So the comeback, the Chiefs are down 24-0. The first drive, they have the ball at Houston's 42 after the Hardman return. Drive number two, they have the ball at Houston's 33 after the Reed fake punt. And Drew Sorensen made the tackle. We'll talk about him later, too. Drive number three came with the ball at Houston's 6-yard line. This is after the DeAndre Carter fumble, which made the game 21-0. Drive number four, finally, the Chiefs have a drive during this comeback where they start the ball at their own territory. They have the ball at their own 10-yard line, 8 plays, 75 yards, 2 minute, 3 seconds. They scored another touchdown. That play, of course, had the Lonnie Johnson Jr. Pass interference penalty on Kelsey. And then Mahomes had some good scrambles as well, too. And I think the worst thing about the comeback, though, you know, looking at it here afterwards and, you know, being rational, intelligent beings again, is just that the Texans were so overwhelmed, I think, with the fact they were up 24-0, and they just immediately crapped themselves after that. And they just didn't pressure the Chiefs at all whatsoever, up 24-0. Like, they laid out the red carpet for them. And again, you're looking at a team that has a transcendent quarterback, a great passing attack, that's a year removed from being an all-time great offense, and you give them starting drives of 42-33-6, and then you're at their own 10-yard line. And it's a wide-open door to be able to come back at that point, too. And so it's like, you know, I know the defense was bad and that sort of thing, but the defense, these situations that you put them into during this comeback were completely outrageous, and then Kansas City just wiped the floor with the defense from there in the second half after this whole sort of run. But it was way too easy. They made it way too easy for Kansas City.
Yeah, let's go. I want to talk about one thing in particular as far as that when you went through that little phase. Is the Mecole Hardman return, because that to me really displayed the physical difference between the two teams. You have one team that is a track race. You have sprinters who are playing wide receiver, and Hardman has Tyreek Hill type speed a little bit. Everybody's a notch down from Tyreek Hill, but if there's the next notch down, it's Hardman. And you can see that on display on that kick return. And we talk about momentum. Look, there's no such thing as momentum. There really isn't. That's a rubbish term. Anything's momentum. Oh, we made a tackle, there's a momentum change and that sort of thing. The fact is that Kansas City's athletes were so much better than ours, but it was Kansas City taking advantage of their athletes that separated from us. So we got those easy touchdowns. We didn't give Carlos Hyde the ball a whole bunch. And then all of a sudden, we get up 24-0 and we get like 10 chums, like right then. And so we're just giving the ball to the worst, you know, skill player on our offense. And that, you know, okay, and the tight ends. But look, when you've got Duke Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins, DeAndre Carter, Will Fuller, Kenny Stills on your offense, and you keep giving the ball to Carlos Hyde up the middle, it does jack. And I want to add one more thing to that. They ran an outside zone play on the first series with Carlos Hyde that gained the 7 yards, which was a long for the game. That was the last time they ran it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a bad outside zone team, but that play worked well at that point. The rushing attack, we'll talk about a little bit later too. But yeah, I think that was his long carry with 7 yards on the first drive, and everything else after that didn't work at all well too. And I think that has a lot to do with Kansas City's defense, how they've changed it since the loss to Tennessee, and the things that Houston did in that first matchup. That was kind of one of the things that we talked about on the side a lot last week, was how much of what happened the first game actually matters for the second game. And it turned out really not a whole lot at all whatsoever, except for the fact that Houston had a bunch of breaks in this game like they had in the previous one. But this one, you know, became sour really fast. So the special teams, they had the two big plays, but they also had the big negative plays. They missed the field goal. Carter had the fumble. They weren't able to convert the punt return. The defense allowed 51 points. The offense only scored 31 points. I saw some other stuff, like the offense did its job in this game. The offense scored 17 points really in this game. They had a red zone touchdown, which was important because you have to take advantage of opportunities like that after the Hill muff. But they had, and I don't know why they call it muff. I always feel nasty every time I say that. I have no idea where that came from. And then they had the fake screen, you know, touchdown that was a beautiful design. But like, that's 21 of their points right there. And they scored 10 points after that point. And the offense was bad too. The defense was bad. The special teams, I think, kind of balanced itself out some. But what was the biggest reason why the Texans lost this game? Who do you put the most blame on, the offense, the defense, or the special teams?
Bill O'Brien. I mean, we're just cut to the chase. Because the thing that I'm going to keep going back to when it comes to Bill O'Brien and what he's done, especially since he took over as GM, is he has thrown every available resource at the offense to make himself look better. And what he also did is he traded Jadavie. Oh my God, I can't say his name right now. I'm so tired. I've been up so long. Anyway, he traded Clowney to Seattle.
Our nasty boy, Jadavion Clowney.
Yeah, he traded Clowney to Seattle. And look, I get it. You know, the Barkevious Mingo, block punt. Hey, you know, thrill of the lifetime. And you know, Jacob Martin got us a couple of sacks, but neither of those guys have the impact. Both those guys combined aren't even like a quarter of Clowney when it comes to what the impact they have on a game. So he stripped away components from Rack, from Romeo Cornell, and he traded all the picks to make himself look better offensively. So we're left with playing guy, and then of course there's Brian Gain, who also, you know, if there's like Bill O'Brien deserves the most blame, and Brian Gain's right below that, because you can't subsist off taking a guy like Lonnie Johnson, who clearly did not deserve to be drafted in the second round. He was the worst cornerback in the NFL this year, bar none, like the worst. He was embarrassed repeatedly on Sunday. Then we were picking up guys like Gary Conley and Vernon Hargraves off the scrap heap. That's not how you build a secondary. We gave Bradley Roby. We're so excited about Bradley Roby. We gave him a 1 year deal.
Mm-hmm.
And look, you know, Tayshaun Gibson was a solid signing. He was hurt. Jaleel Adai was a great signing or a solid signing, but he was hurt. You know, you can't go sign cornerbacks, the most important position. And Jonathan Joseph, we've been calling for Jonathan Joseph to be removed for a couple of years now. The guy's done. He's been done. He didn't play a single snap on Sunday. You can't go replace him with Vernon Hargraves.
Well, I think it was good to replace him. I think the bad idea is go into the season expecting Joseph to play outside corner. But I think replacing Hargraves was better than having Joseph out there, you know?
Probably. But is that how you want to go attack it, or do you want to give?
No, you don't want to go to the season like that at all. And those are the things that we talked about all last offseason about the pass defense. It wasn't that we didn't like the Roby sign; thought the Roby sign was fine. But you know, both you and I said they should make probably two more signings like this. They have the cap space. Just add Steven Nelson. Add other guys like that you can sign for a short deal. Yeah, Claiborne was bad in Kansas City, but it's still the same idea. Just like get competent players there. They just need, even mediocrity would be a big difference compared to having, you know, Jackson at slot corner and having Sharice Wright out there as well too. And then the Lonnie Johnson draft pick, you know, that's what we talked about as well too, that Johnson has the body, like the prototype to be a good player one day. But I'm not expecting anything from Johnson until year three. Like he can't play press despite his size. He can't tackle very well. He's slow off his breaks. Like he's like a cover three, you know, zone turn corner, and the Texans didn't use him at all like that this year. And they had to play him a lot this year because they didn't have any secondary talent. And say, so, well, if you need a guy in the secondary who's going to play right away, trade up and take Greedy Williams or take the guy Arizona took in the first round. Take a guy who actually has some talent to show, or not necessarily talent, but has shown like refinement at the position, who can play right away and isn't the worst cornerback in football, like you mentioned with your Pro Football Focus stats too for it. But I mean, all this is kind of like a long one to say is that the Texans pass defense is awful. It's terrible. The Chiefs passing offense is great. Their offense scored 35.3 points a game. That's not right. That was last season. Their passing offense this year in DVOA is 43.7%, which is second. The Texans pass defense, 19.5%, which is 26. They allowed 24.1 points a game, 6.9 net yards at 10, which is 25th. And last season, their pass defense DVOA was 8.8%. So it got 11% worse in a year after trading Clowney, after bringing in Martin, after improving the secondary with Roby and Conley and Hargraves and Gibson. And during this tirade, I'm missing one more player, but it doesn't really matter at all.
Adai.
And so, like, despite adding all these players, the pass defense was worse. And this really is a direct attribute to not having Jadeveon Clowney. And also, your run defense is worse, too. So you don't have as many negative plays. And you're not forcing as many, you know, second and 12s, that sort of things as well. But this game, if I blacked out and woke up, saw a score, it wouldn't be surprising at all. The Texans' pass defense has been terrible. We've been saying this since August it was going to be bad. They were able to survive by because they limited the number of possessions. They had a high turnover rate. And this was the collapse that we thought we were going to see a lot more of during the regular season. It just happened in the worst time, in the worst place possible. And this pass defense was the exact reason why, like, as much fun, like, as cute as the New England one, as much as I love them being New England, as much fun as last week was, you're just kind of sitting around waiting for this game to happen. And that's kind of what happened despite everything else that broke in front of it, too.
Yeah, I think we got extraordinarily lucky when we played Josh Allen. And I know I'm sorry to beat you on your man crush with Josh Allen, but we got really lucky. And the defense played very well because they can play well against a guy like Josh Allen.
Well, they can blitz against Allen is the thing. And yeah. And also, I mean, Buffalo's receivers drop, you know, three big passes in that game too. And it's a 23-year-old quarterback, which is different than playing, you know, Ryan Tannehill. But Buffalo was tougher than playing, you know, Pittsburgh though, or Indianapolis or Oakland. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, you're completely right. So, and that's the one thing I want to go back to is Bill O'Brien's two wins in the playoffs are against Connor Cook, who never played another NFL snap in his career, and Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about Cook, too, is he was the third string quarterback that year because Matt McGloin got hurt and couldn't play. And that was Cook's only start. He never got another chance. And Jadeveon Clowney just like absolutely just terrorized him the entirety of that game. I felt bad for Cook that game.
Mm-hmm.
Poor guy.
Smiles.
So one of the big things that came out of this game is that a lot of complaints towards Romeo Crennel. Like you mentioned, just the talent isn't here. I went back and watched the game after seeing a lot of these gripes like, well, they played too much off-man coverage. They didn't play off-man coverage this game. They played man with Lonnie Johnson on Kelce a lot. They played press man as well, too. They pretty much put Robbie on Tyreek Hill the entire game, and they had Justin Reed deep after from that point on. And also, like, they were like, well, you have to take Johnson off Kelce. I went back and watched. They tried Reed on Kelce. That didn't work. They tried Hargreaves on Kelce. That didn't work. They tried doubling Kelce with Hargreaves and Johnson. That didn't work. Kelce in this game had 10 catches on 12 targets for 134 yards and three touchdowns. They had that one, you know, foot drag touchdown where Roby's at the boundary, and rather than sit in front of Kelce, he takes off with Zach Cunningham to try to play Mahomes, and that leads to the drop-off too. Hargreaves gave a touchdown to... No, Conley gave a touchdown to Kelce as well, too, because he's at the sideline, and Kelce stops, and Conley sees he has 2 yards of space the sideline, and he over-pursues him to the pylon for whatever reason and sits and allows Kelce to catch another touchdown, too. But Romeo Crennel tried everything he could to cover him. Nothing worked at all whatsoever, and it's like, well, I mean, I just don't know what else he could possibly do in this game to make this pass defense not give up 51 points, you know?
And the complaints about playing off, you have to play off. I mean, the entire thing with Romeo Crennel's defense, because you look, we're not going to get to Mahomes because we have J.J. Watt and guys. And then I'm not sure. So one of my biggest criticisms is that we could have played other guys than, you know, Carlos Watkins a lot. But you're not going to get to Mahomes because we have no legit pass rush. So you have to play your safeties and your cornerbacks off because you want to keep everything in front of you, or else you're going to get burned deep because Mahomes can make those throws. There are rare times you see a defensive coordinator who is in such a lose-lose situation when it comes to his personnel. Can't get to the quarterback, can't cover wide receivers. What do you do?
Yeah, there really wasn't anything at all. Listen to some of these matchups they had. They have Mike Adams versus Blake Bell. Mike Adams is 37 years old. He hasn't been good since Obama's first term. And he's out there in a playoff game getting beat off play action covering Blake Bell, which is absolutely stupid. You have Sammy Watkins versus Garyon Conley.
God, that was the one that was killing
and,
me.
I mean,
sorry.
Watkins had two catches for 64 yards. And on that play, you have Conley playing cover two, and he plays the flat instead of trailing Watkins, you know, and that was just that's and again, like, you can't even play zone against the Chiefs because you have Tyreek Hill running. Just zone is hilarious against the Chiefs. You watched all 22 because it's just Hill running in and out of deep zones, just pulling defenders and waiting for him to come down, running behind him wide open. Or you run two safeties and you have the entire middle occupied or unoccupied, and then you have Hardman running a deep streak through wide open. Like, you can't play zone against them, you have to play man, and the Texans didn't have the guys to do it. The one gripe I have about Romeo Crennel's game plan was that J.J. Watt didn't rush from the interior at all. It was Watt versus Mitchell Schwartz. That doesn't work. Watt had a really bad game. He was tired very fast in it. There's a lot of plays where he just gave up. Like, he got blocked by Tyreek Hill on a bootleg going the other way. They also zone read him a lot. They ran the zone read at him, and they made him the read defender, and he wasn't able to play both at the same time at all. He had a really rough game, but I think him against Wiley, him against DeVarney Tardif, him against Wisniewski, like, those are the matchups you want, and they kept him on the outside the entire time, which is strange because against Buffalo, he did have some interior reps too.
Yeah, and I think I want to go back to late in the first half, I don't see J.J. Watt like really gasping for air like that very often, but he was done. He was done by the end of the first half in that game. And because he was having to take a lot of routes outside. Now, you know, we've talked about, or one of the big things about the pro Bill O'Brien crowd, even today, is talking about, well, the team never gave up on him. Well, I tell you what, that's about as close as I've seen J.J. Watt give up, because he was done.
Yeah,
I mean,
he was,
I'm
just
not
tired.
Saying that.
Yeah,
it was just hard to play that long with that many snaps, and there's, who are you going to swap him out with, you know? So that, there was a lot going on in that game, kind of underneath the hood. You don't have adequate backups. You're still giving guys like Watkins a lot of snaps. You're still giving guys like Colin Baye some snaps. There's not a whole lot of depth there because, well, we had to give away, you know, first round picks for Laremy Tunsil.
Well, and that hasn't hurt them yet, though. They don't have a lot of depth. But I'm saying, like, it hasn't affected their team this year, the Tunsil trade, which is why the Tunsil trade's great, because it hasn't hurt this team at all this season. It's going to hurt them next year and the year after. But they don't have depth because they like to get run-stopping 3-4 defensive linemen, and they trade their best pass rusher, or their second-best pass rusher, Clowney. Winnie Merciless isn't very good. I'm excited to write a film room about Merciless, you know, as a season review thing, saying, like, the Merciless contract's already a terrible decision. And like, the biggest thing is it's talent. And I know, like, so much of football, the fun thing is to get really entailed in a scheme and matchups, that sort of thing. But it's like, if you don't have the talent, you can't play with teams like this. And Houston didn't have the talent against Kansas City. So many things that happened for them to beat them the first time. Kansas City was injured. The Chiefs team from the Titans game is an entirely different team these last 8 weeks. And they've morphed into a great team again as well, too. Going back to the pass rush, though, they tried a lot of different things. A lot of people were like, well, they didn't blitz. They did blitz. They blitzed a lot. You could, if you go back and watch it, they tried blitz McKinney and Cunningham a ton in the interior. None of it worked. They tried blitz safeties in the interior. None of it worked. They couldn't create any interior rush at all whatsoever. DJ Reader was bad. Angelo Blackson was bad. And the entire time I was watching, I was thinking back to last offseason when you have Ndamukong Suh, when you have Gerald McCoy, when you have Sheldon Richardson, when you have, like, Mike Adams, I know, was kind of hurt or whatever, but there was a wide variety of interior rushers available for cheap last offseason, and they didn't get any of those guys at all. And every single one popped up, you're like, they should sign that guy, they should sign that guy, they should sign that guy. And they didn't sign any of them at all whatsoever. And the interior pass was just bad. The exterior stuff, Mahomes was able to run around. And the other thing is, too, is you can't blitz Mahomes. He'll throw out the blitz, he'll find open receivers. The Chiefs are really great at calling audibles at the line and recognizing blitz and running short little curls and stuff like that at the blitz itself and at finding the space against the blitz and creating easy completions. And also, whenever they did blitz and create pressure, you see Mahomes run away from the blitz. There's nobody over on that side because that edge rusher is rushing up the field to try to create a sack, and Mahomes just takes it off and scrambles forever too. So they're like, even whenever Crennel did the things that a lot of people wanted them to do, which is blitz more and, you know, play other guys. Omenehu play. He had a quarterback hit, but didn't do anything else after that. Martin was bad this game. Merciless is bad this game. Scarlett was bad this game. Their players just couldn't win their one versus one matchups at all. And then even they did try to bring pressure, that didn't work either. So I know, like, a lot of things that a lot of people were clamoring for this defense to work in the passing game. Crennel tried everything he could, and I didn't see any of it work at all whatsoever. I think the only thing they did well was not allow Tyreek Hill to beat them deep. And I think that was the main source of their game plan, was don't get beat deep, let's force them long drives. And then all the bozo things that happened in the first quarter, first half, kind of prevented that from happening as well, too.
Well, I mean, look who had the only sack of the game for the Texans. Garen Conley.
Oh, yeah, is that what happened?
That was it. That was in the first quarter, I think, too. It was early on in the game. And that was the only time that we got to Mahomes the entire game, because he just moved out of it. And here's the trade-offs again. Because you can't play zone against the Chiefs, that means you've got a lot of backs against the quarterback, you know, quarterbacks looking at a lot of backs, defensive backs. And so Mahomes had plenty of room to run because we don't have a very quick defensive line. You know, Jacob Martin's probably the only guy, but there was a couple of, how many times did you see Mahomes just run around J.J. Watt or run around DJ Reader for a 13-yard scramble? It happened like five times, I think. And those were really easy yards because those were the guys that we were relying upon to get Mahomes.
Yeah, and Watt, I mean, Watt especially, all Watt didn't do any power moves at all. They were all, you know, wide edge rushes against Schwartz. And, like, even on the left side, like, even him against Fisher instead, he could at least beat Fisher some long arms and bull rushes, and they didn't do that. They just say, okay, Merciless is against the left tackle, Watt's against the right tackle, that's how we play. And I wonder how much of that's, too, just, like, I don't know the relationship Watt has with the coaching staff and what he does in the locker room. He's like, no, I want Schwartz. I want the right side. I'm more comfortable there. And they build their game plan around that compared to, like, this is the better spot for you. I wonder how much, like how much giving in they do to Watt to put him in the spots that maybe he wants or he's more comfortable doing instead of kind of making better decisions too.
Well, that goes back to what our friend, you know, Rivers McCown said, is that there is a rumors that J.J. Watt didn't want to play inside anymore. That started a couple of years ago, and it's because of the back issues. And yeah. He felt like he was taking too much of a pounding on the back. Don't know if it's true. It makes a lot of sense.
And he does, but, and it makes sense whenever you have Clowney and you have another guy who plays on the interior well, but whenever you don't and you're in a playoff game, that's your best matchup. You know, I don't know. The whole thing kind of sucked too. The next question we have here is from our first listener questions from @Texans_thoughts from the podcast. And he had some questions about like what they could have done defense, but we talked a lot about that. He asked, is Romeo Crennel gone or not? He had very little to work with, but I still feel like he could have done more. His main complaint was his inability to scheme with pressure. But again, I do think he tried to scheme with pressure. He tried to fill the interior to create pressure up there, and the Chiefs just picked it up well, and Mahomes was able to throw against him, run out of it really easily against Houston this game.
Yeah, it's like blaming the bellboy for the Titanic going down. It's like, you know, he was put in such a poor position in order to be able to make things happen. And again, I want to go back to something I really want to stress, is that teams are so apprehensive about throwing the ball against us. Teams are so scared. And we saw this with Buffalo last week, is they were so scared to do anything down the field. So you just run Josh Allen a lot. This stuff has been here all year, but we didn't see it because we played Minshew instead of Foles. We played Kyle Allen instead of, Cam Newton. There was a couple others that we played non-quarterback kind of guys because other guys were injured. We got really lucky because we dropped a couple of the good quarterbacks off schedule this year. It's been there all year.
Yeah. No, and then going back to that too, like Minshew's a good sideline thrower, but they wouldn't let him throw on the sideline against Houston. Like remember that fourth quarter against them where like they start letting him throw to Chark, and Chark had, you know, 75 yards and two drives. They came, you know, whisker from tying against in the London game. They just threw the ball to the flat over and over again. And it seemed like they purposely sabotaged Minshew so they could start Foles next week, which they did. And they benched Foles immediately afterwards. Adding on to that, the Chargers were bad. Jameis Winston lost his two best receivers going into week 16. The Falcons were bad as well too. And so like, yeah, like the schedule was still tough. The Patriots had a bad quick passing attack this year. The schedule was a lot tougher in August than it was during the regular season. And the pass defense has been bad on a per-play basis the entire year. The interceptions helped it. The big plays by guys like Watt and Martin helped it as well, too. Really making big plays, you know, really helped it as well. But on a per-play, like, just coverage versus coverage, pass rush versus blocking defense, it was bad. And the reason why they're able to survive with it also is because the offense was very conservative and ball-control-oriented, too. So do you think Crennel is going to get fired all this week, or you expect for him to be back again next year?
Well, you know, O'Brien said today that he sees no reason why Crennel doesn't come back. And I don't disagree with it. Again, I think Crennel is getting a really bum rap.
Yeah.
Because he's been getting the scraps. You know, Bill O'Brien gets to go out. And the analogy that keeps coming to my mind is like Bill O'Brien is the first bum to the dumpster. And he's getting all the great picks. And Crennel is like the eighth guy to come around. And he's like going, look, there's not even cheese stuck to the top of this pizza box. So I just get the box. And so that's how I kind of feel like Crennel is right now. It's just like he doesn't get the first pickings. He gets the eighth pickings for what happens with this roster because Bill O'Brien is just chowing down on everything.
Yeah, I'm expecting, I mean, if they fire Crennel, it'd be a bad decision. I think one of the things that O'Brien did well was to keep Crennel, or was it bring Crennel in as their defensive coordinator and stick with them too. The one year they didn't have Crennel was the Vrabel year, and their defense dropped off to like 22nd. after, and then every year Cornell's been the defense coordinator here, they've had top 10 defense, even going back to last year they did. And this has been the one year where like things have finally fallen apart enough, and it hasn't worked out. And the Clowney trade was a disaster, and like we saw the final repercussions of it this week. The pass defense was atrocious, and a lot of things they were worried about didn't come back to bite them entirely, because you mentioned the schedule. Also, I think playing the Raiders without number one wide receiver was very fortunate too. And despite all this, they were 9-3 one score games. They won 2.2 more games than expected, and they were fortunate, and they really survived on Deshaun Watson's magic to even get to this point as well too, and even being the opportunity to have the to go up 24-0 against Kansas City, and then kind of fail from there too. The last thing I want to say about the defense, I think the red zone defense was the worst part of their game. They allowed 6 touchdowns on their 7 drives. The Chiefs had a red zone touchdown rate of 54% this year, which is 20th. The Texans, I've run the game preview, which is fun. Like, I think the only way Houston can slow Kansas City down is they say, all right, we're going to not allow you throw deep. We're going to bend all the way to like the 10-yard line, and we're going to hope and pray that we either have enough turnovers, enough passes are dropped, or, you know, we can just survive in the red zone. And the Texans, of course, were 32nd touchdown rate this year. So that whole thing didn't work out. But they forced him multiple third downs in the red zone. Mahomes was able to roll out and make some little drop-off passes against them. But I think that was kind of their game, Cornell's game plan in a lot of ways, is that we have to win the red zone. You know, up to this point, they're going to move the ball on us. We have to win these situations. And, you know, again, going back to all the turnovers that once they went up 24-0, and then the red zone touchdown issues they allowed here kind of, you know, killed this defense entirely. And that was their one chance to kind of limit Kansas City at all, was to force field goals instead of touchdowns, and they didn't do that all this game either.
Yeah, and a lot of that, we actually did not play that poorly in the red zone, but Travis Kelce and Pat Mahomes were magical in the red zone and with those little drop passes.
Yeah, it was just play action rollouts. The Bell play, I think, was the funniest one. And they also, they had the play too where they had Martin got rubbed, and he's in man versus man coverage against Damon Williams. And like, Martin's really fast, and Williams just floated by him. Like, whenever I watch the Chiefs play, it's like the other team's in slow motion and they're in regular motion. They're just so much faster than everybody else.
Oh my God. Even before that, when I saw that play lining up, I was like, no, no. Damian Williams is going to run a wheel route and he's going to get so wide. Oh, there it is. Like, I didn't even get it out of my brain before it was happening. It was so quick.
Yeah, it was kind of a horror movie. So in offense, the Texans only scored 31 points. And again, the offense did not do its job this game. They scored 7 points of a block punt. They scored 7 points after a muff punt. They scored 7 points after a play they've never run before. I've watched every, you know, Bill O'Brien Texans game. They've never run that play. They always run the quick wide receiver screen where the left tackle can't make the block out there. And this time they even run Laramie Tunsil out there on the one they ran earlier in the game because he never makes that block. I have a lot of things I want to say about Tunsil on a different show, just because he's not like transcendent at all. He's a good one versus one pass blocker, but he doesn't add enough everywhere else, you know. So Watson was 31-52 for 388 yards and 2 touchdowns. He also led the team with 37 rushing yards as well. The biggest gripe I have with the offense was everything was so hard for them, and it's been like this in the entire season. And I know we had a short Twitter exchange where you mentioned like, you know, Shanahan's offense is so good at creating easy yards, and that's the thing that all great offenses do in the league. They all create easy yards and open throws, except for Seattle, and Wilson's just magic. And you know, Houston is kind of similar slot where these are really hard throws he's having to make. These are throws where he has one read available to him. That's it. These are a lot of plays where he's scrambling around and nothing is open downfield. They run so many isolation routes. Even if they get zone coverage, they're running isolation routes against zone coverage. They never flood anything. There's no route combinations that anybody else open. It's just everything's individual. And I don't think Watson played a bad game at all. I think he played a fine game, but he wasn't like spectacular or tremendous. I think a lot of that just has to do with, you know, the Chiefs have a good pass defense.
Oh, you just froze on me.
I'm here. I stopped talking.
Okay, you're there. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the one thing, and we talked about the, you know, specifically the before the fake punt, the very much an isolation pass to Will Fuller. I mean, he was the only, there was one read. That was it. Deshaun Watson looked up, saw he was draped, and just threw the ball into the ground. That happens too often in the Bill O'Brien offense. So if you look at what Kyle Shanahan does, that he does really well, is he moves Garoppolo around. He forces defenses to make Garoppolo, I'm putting this really poorly, it's the different passing angles that Shanahan uses by getting Garoppolo out of the pocket. What Bill O'Brien does is he does not do that. He does not get Deshaun out of the pocket with any regularity unless it's a pure RPO. And that's really silly. So when you look at the Shanahan, the Kubiak offenses, there's a lot of bootlegging. There's a lot of movement in the quarterback. You create new throwing angles. Bill O'Brien doesn't do any of that. And I think a lot of the easy yards come from that and from the outside zone. So you allow your guys, your running back, to make cuts that they would normally cut. You allow them to use their vision to make cuts. With Carlos Hyde running him up the middle 13, 15, 20 times a game, there's not a whole lot there. Every once in a while, yes, he bounces one outside successfully, but that's why he's either really bad or really good. It's bipolar with him. And on Sunday, he was really bad. Because, look, when Mike Vrabel picks up on it, that Bill O'Brien just does this thing. He's talking about Carlos Hyde up the middle. And this is not new. We've seen it since, you know, Bill O'Brien did not know how to use Arian Foster. And he tried to use Lamar Miller in this Carlos Hyde role. And that was a miserable failure because that's not who these guys are. Carlos Hyde is a great guy for him because exactly who the kind of runner he is. But This was not a good season. So anyway, you create the easy yards by putting your players in a position to win. I don't think doing the same thing with Carlos Hyde up the middle does that. I don't think forcing Deshaun Watson, who's a really good thrower on the run, to stay in the pocket.
Yeah. I think Shanahan too. I saw a stat that he uses the most motion of any team in the league. I thought it had to be Baltimore, but actually San Francisco uses more motion too. And they just do some wild things, like that play they ran against Seattle in week 17, where they put Kittle in motion, and then he stops, and then he turns back around to snap the play, and they run a wide receiver reverse and use him as a lead blocker. He's expanded so far upon everything from just saying that outside zone play just adds so many layers to it as well. I think the other problem with the Texans offense, or the difference between the two, is that everything looks the same, the Shanahan offense, so like you really have no idea what you're expecting. And the Texans offense is like, okay, Darren Fells is in the flex wing position. Here comes a power run play. Here comes a gap scheme play. Darren Fells on the line of scrimmage, it's either going to be play action to two receivers running deep, or he's going to run like into the flat or make a short curl, and we have a pass here. Like the tells there are very easy to see, and they don't run the ball a shotgun with Duke Johnson very often as well either. And it's just like a very predictable and stale offense. And this is coming from somebody who's just like sitting in my room watching the All-22. I'm like, oh, it's going to be a run. And then, you know, there it is right there immediately too. I mean, the biggest problem with this offense though, this game, was on third down, fourth down. Houston was converted 5 of their 15 attempts on third and four, or on third down, they were 5-15. On fourth down, they were 1-5. Watson on third and fourth down combined was 8-15 for 53.3%, 113 yards, one touchdown. He was sacked 3 times and had 7.5 yards an attempt. And like whenever the Texans were in those third down situations, they were unable to convert throughout this entire game. Did you see something similar as well too? Because they seem like they moved the ball, but they got the ball to like the 45 and they faced the third down. That was kind of the end of it a lot of the time.
It was. It's because the play calling got really unimaginative. Aside from that first drive, it got the isolation of Will Fuller. I'm going to pick on that one a lot because that was the one that was killing. It was those sorts of plays. Like there was another third down. God, I can't remember the scenario. But it was once again, when the Texans... The route trees that the Texans run sometimes are so confounding because you'll wind up with three guys within 5 yards of each other. And I don't know if that's by design, and if it is, it's really stupid. But there is another one that we had on Sunday. Matt, take over. Because I start talking about this, I just want to punch something because the play calling is so poor.
Yeah. The frustrating thing, too, it's like this is year 6. This has been, I guess, from a win-loss record, the best like Texans team we've seen so far, and this is about the end of the Deshaun Watson rookie contract, and the best that they were able to come up with is a fortunate team who blew a 21-0 lead to the Kansas City Chiefs, where they scored 41 straight points on as well too. The other thing I saw too is they, like, again, I really hate all the isolation routes, especially against a team like Kansas City. And Kansas City does a lot of different things. They play a lot of press man. They play a lot of single high. They play a lot of zone as well too. They use Matthew in a wide variety of ways. But they also ran like a lot of like short comeback routes against short hook zones, and there's just nothing open at all. And like their pick and pop passing works well when they're dropping back 7 yards deep, and then their guy sits there right away, like the fellow's touchdown, the other fellow's conversion. But overall, like it a lot, like the Carolina game, I think is the best example of that offense at its utmost worst. And then it rears its head at times, like games like today, where it just gets really stagnant on third down. Just nobody's open, and Watson's constantly searching. And it's unbelievable for Watson to be looking for DeAndre Hopkins to get open, or Will Fuller to get open, or Kenny Stills to get open against a Kansas City team whose like cornerbacks are fine, but they're not tremendous. You know, Hopkins versus Tre'Davious Ward's a big mismatch advantage, and not one that they were able to attack all that much. Instead, a lot of Hopkins catches went to the slot again. Same thing with Will Fuller too, whenever they had Fuller there and Matthew there as well.
Yeah, and that's two things I want to touch on, because we caught a lot of passes with wide receivers looking back at the quarterback, or a lot of passes just thrown generally with a lot of wide receivers looking back at the quarterback, which means you're not in motion. You're an easy tackle. You're an easy target. And number two, we should have been burning them. Every time they went single safety high, we should have been scorching them, and we did not take advantage of that.
Yeah, and that's also, this defense went from Juan Thornhill, who has been awesome this year. He tore his ACL, and replacing him was Armani Watts, who's a second-year player who's made, I believe, one start this year. And they just didn't press him at all, really, very much in all this game. And Kansas City played a lot of single high. The other thing Kansas City has done a lot of lately is play a lot of three safety sets. So it's Matthew, Sorensen, and Watts all on the same team, are all on the defense at the same time. And that gave Houston, I think, a lot of trouble in the running game, especially where they just had an extra guy in the box on obvious rundowns. And it's hard to tell from the all 22, but Spagnuolo, I know one of the things he did from the run defense was he put Pennell in there. He put Kalen Sanders in there, and both of those guys have been very good stopping the run. And he will also just walk his linebackers up in the A gap and turn into a fifth down lineman. And then he'll have the safety on the outside as well for those cutbacks, and it kind of removes their cutbacks too. So they're sitting in every gap, and they have a guy out there, and their linebackers don't make any plays really at all, because everything's contained to their safeties and defensive line, which is interesting. And the Texans really didn't press downfield as much as you think they would, or set up matchup advantages downfield. I think Hopkins didn't do enough like vertical routes against Tre'Davious Ward as well, especially from like not necessarily press so far to the sideline, but in between the tight set and the sideline, because Ward can get beat off the line of scrimmage. He does a lot of zone turning, but by getting you less, he uses the sideline very well to his advantage by getting those nine routes a lot more space. I think was one way they could create to get Hopkins to get open, and they didn't do that as well either.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to go back again, because when you look at what was happening with the pressure on Watson, it was a lot of Frank Clark. Frank Clark beat Chris Clark terribly.
And Tunsil. He beat Tunsil off this game, too. He had two sacks against Tunsil in this game.
And so you had to put up with a lot of that, and they did a good job using the secondary to blitz. So how about we do something imaginative, like get Deshaun Watson out of the pocket? How about we do something like change the throwing angles? And we didn't do that. We just don't do that as a team. So what happens is you have Frank Clark, who's coming off an edge. You got in front pressure. It seems like it's like I've seen this broken record before, and I don't like it. And it's that we don't do anything imaginative with Watson to create a God, that's corny sounding. I'm not going to say that. To create our successful scenarios for him. We don't. We just keep him in the pocket, and that's it. And then he's got to scramble, and he's got to make plays down the field because the offensive line still isn't holding up. They were getting into the backfield quickly. Yes, Frank Clark had like a 10-second sack. I get it. You know, that's
but he's still, partly on he's still but no, but he on that sack, though, too, he still beat Tunsil with the rip move, create pressure immediately, forces Watson to step up, and then he's looking for something open. Now he's in scramble mode, and he ends up sacking from behind. But that's not on Watson's fault. The pressure is there immediate, and there's nothing open. And if you look at the dots on the sack, there's nothing open. If you watch all 22 of the sack, nothing's open on it, you know?
Yep. Anyway, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so this weekend established the run. Houston had 11 first-down rushes for 49 yards. Hyde had 7 carries for 24 yards, which is 3.43 yards a carry. Watson has 6.1 yards an attempt. Watson's typically better on first down. I don't think the first down run game was that bad this game compared to weeks previous where it's like, you know, 2.2 yards a carry and that sort of thing. They ran a lot of power. I saw like gap scheme plays and it got them like 4 yards pretty well, but there's nothing else in addition to that. And they just kind of led to Houston being in like 3rd down and 4 and 3rd down and 6 where they're unable to convert a lot of times. On 2nd and 7 and longer, which is also included establishing the run, they had 3 rushes for 16 yards, which is 5.33 yards a carry. I think Carlos Hyde only had 1 carry out of those. I think Watson had 2 carries for like 7 yards in that portion of it. And for Chum, which is of course Carlos Hyde up the middle, he had 9 carries for 30 yards, which is 3.33 yards a carry. And again, it was a lot of like interior power plays against Kansas City.
I got nothing to add.
The run game, I was surprised they didn't run the ball more considering how much they ran the ball last time. And especially going up 24-0 on them, I expected them to just be like, yeah, we're going to run the ball a lot. We're going to try this stupid zone read thing that doesn't work. They didn't do that very much. I thought they should have used Watson as a runner a lot more too. I think, again, it's just like how all those stupid plays and the turnovers on the special teams and everything else after they went up 24-0 and the fake punt and everything else, I think it really kind of killed their ability to do something like go more power, go more run heavy, attack Kansas City's run defense and their linebackers. And they didn't. They didn't because of those situations. But even then, I do think Kansas City's run defense has been better since the Tennessee game too. With some of the scheme changes Spagnuolo has done that I mentioned, you know, 5 minutes ago or so.
Yeah, and what I really noticed is that they're, and you mentioned it earlier with the linebackers, but even putting the defensive tackles into the A-gap and just really, you're not going to beat us here. They seem to really focus on that during the game.
Yeah, and Pennell has been good, and Sanders has been good. He's a rookie. Pennell's like 34 and weighs 315 pounds. Like, he's so squatty. Mm-hmm. Like, he has crazy
it's
leverage.
It's a fire hydrant.
And I think also, like, looking at the offensive line, too, if you look at their skill sets, like, I think Tunsil can block any scheme, but he's a zone-blocking guy. I think Sharping is more of a power-blocking guy, more of a gap-scheme guy. I think Nick Martin's a zone-scheme guy. I think Fulton you have no idea what Fulton is at all. I think Fulton gained way too much weight in Houston. He doesn't look as slim as he looked in Kansas City. Or maybe it's just the white jerseys makes everybody's belly look bigger for Houston. And they don't have a right tackle right now at the moment. But I think there's just no cohesion at all in marrying like their talents to their run scheme on their offensive line too. And that's, I think, part of the reason why their run blocking is just so like so blah throughout the entire year.
Yeah.
So were you surprised by how well Clark played this game? He had 3 sacks, 3 tackles for a loss, and 4 quarterback hits.
I was, because he was not very good all year. He really wasn't. But he got some time off, right? And so he got to rest up, but he looked really fresh mm-hmm. on Sunday. That really blew me away.
Yeah, I was watching the video, and the last 3 weeks, I think he played well. I did the podcast with Jeff Fadden where we talked about the Chiefs only. He was saying he had a pinched nerve, and it seems like he recovered from that. And one of the things I've always really enjoyed about watching Clark play is he's really like long with his arms. They're just everywhere. He's like a big windmill, and any sort of restriction movement with his arms I think really affected him. But he's been good for about 3 weeks or so now. Chris Jones, as a pass rusher, hasn't been that great, and him being injured wasn't the biggest surprise to me. Because he hasn't been like, he's been more of like a 3-4 run stopping defensive in the last few weeks or so. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to play next week. But he hasn't been like the same sort of player lately too. They really have kind of flipped though, where Jones was spectacular in the middle part of the season. Now Clark is the one who's playing very well. But yeah, this wasn't Clark just beating Chris. I want to make this clear. This wasn't Clark just being Chris Clark. He beat Tunsil a lot this game. He had a really good game against Tunsil. He had some really great pass rush moves, some swims and stuff, and he wasn't locked down by him at all whatsoever in this one.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I want to talk about Jones. I think Jones has been fighting injury so much off and on all year. Like, I know that he had the calf injury was kind of a new thing, but his season has been erratic, mm-hmm. especially compared to last year where he was – it
like J.J. Watt
is
last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, totally.
And even the year before that, too, like he's been great for probably 3 years or now. 3 years or so now. And he's an unrestricted free agent this year, too.
Sure, I'll take him.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Sign him up. Which is it's like a symbol for later on in the show. So we're going to go to our listener questions now. But first, I want to say shout. I want to give a shout out to Drew Sorensen, the Kansas City folk hero. He forced the fumble on the DeAndre Carter play. He made the tackle again on Justin Reed, and he actually made some good run tackles this year. He was the guy who Derrick Henry absolutely murdered in their playoff loss, you know, three years ago to Marcus Mariota. And also Matthew's been a lot better in Kansas City. Watching the video, I really like appreciate how they've used him, where he plays slot corner. He plays, you know, they like to blitz and roll coverages with him. He plays, you know, robber, he plays deep middle. He does so many different things for him. And compared to Houston, where he just played deep middle, he's been better there. And also he hasn't been so annoying in Kansas City too. It's not like he makes a tackle for 12 yards and, you know, and is yapping like he usually does. He also isn't doing that thing where he misses a bunch of tackles either. And there's a few chances he had in this game to, like, absolutely blow up Carlos Hyde or Hopkins, and he didn't do it. It was very nice of him. So as much as I found him annoying in Houston, he's been good in Kansas City this year, and good for them. I'm glad he found a place where they've used him to the best of his abilities, and he's been a much better player too.
Yeah, and I want to just give Matt props on that. I think it was the last Texans drive, offensive drive, that he could have absolutely blown up Deshaun Watson, and he held back. And I just thought that was one of the classiest plays I've seen from an NFL player. And if that would have been Hines Ward or Jack Tatum, you know, Deshaun Watson would be on a hospital bed right now. It was that. Mm-hmm. It could have been that bad. And he didn't. He pressured him, and he hit him, and he didn't ear hole him. And so, you know what? Tyron, I have talked a lot of smack about you over the years. You made up for it in that one play.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been used a lot differently here, or used a lot differently in Kansas City than Houston. I think the cornerback injuries is really kind of what screwed Houston up last year, too, where they had moved Jackson from safety to slot corner, and they put Tyron Matthew as a free safety instead of playing strong safety, and they put Reed there instead because they couldn't get beat deep at all. They trusted Matthew more, which isn't what he's good at, as we saw with the Nelson Aguilar touchdown and a variety of other plays.
Right.
So our listener questions for tonight, the first one's from At The Future Great, and he asked, BFD, what will it take for change? And I think he's talking about the head coaching position.
The money. If Cal McNair isn't seeing the money, that's what it's going to take to change. I don't think anything is going to change because they still keep filling the stadium. I don't think they really care. They don't make the Super Bowl. I think there's a whole lot of, hey, look, we're getting rich. Screw it. That goes along with this. And look, prove me wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to take a 2-12 season or a 5-11 season, some along those lines, because as long as this team keeps doing things like going 10-6, making the playoffs, I can't see them making a change because of it. Now, you listen to Bill O'Brien's press conference today, it's full of stuff like, I think we have great guys here. I think we're on the right path. I think we're very close. We have a great group of guys. We have the guys that we want in the locker room now. All that sort of stuff. And also, who's going to pressure him fire? He controls the entire building. Everybody there works for him except for Cal McNair. He's the GM of the team. Everybody, then he's the son of this entire franchise right now too. So unless, you know, regression comes next year and they go 3-9 in one score games instead of 9-3 one score games, and they miss the postseason, they go 6-10 or something like that, that's the only way I can see Houston moving on from. And the other thing, too, Houston is really healthy this year also, aside from the Watt injury. They were a very healthy team this year, too. But that's the only way I can see a change happening here. I don't think it's even money necessarily. I think it's more another really awful season has to happen.
And with
Watson too, like, he doesn't really allow you, like, the floor is so high with him because of his ability. Mm-hmm. And same thing with Hopkins as well too. That's hard to, it's really, really hard to go like 6-10 whenever you have guys like that. Like, even Rodgers, the worst season he had was like 9-7, even during their kind of like downfall. And the bad years they had, he was hurt completely.
Yeah, I don't even know if 3-13 would do it, because they're going to come up with an excuse. Well, we had too many injuries. We had bad luck this season. As long as the stands are filled, I don't think they care, because we had the 3-13 season.
Well, yeah, and Watson was hurt. And they played well. With,
right.
The offense was good with Watson.
The excuse.
And that, well, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, the excuse is that, well, the reason why they were bad is because they took Tom Savage, and they thought Savage was a competent quarterback, and that's on Bill O'Brien. But they still scored, like, 32 points a game with Watson. He was healthy that year. So like, I,
right.
I, I understood why they kept him that year, but if they did it again, I don't think they would. And it's that's my own personal opinion. The next question we have here is from at Max Morgan. What is wrong with me? I bought a new Texans hat today. So this is now a self-help podcast, BFD. This is Cosmopolitan now.
There's nothing wrong with you. Be a player. Wear that hat. Be proud. Strut. Nothing wrong with you, man.
Yeah, that's. I would say get a new Texas Rangers hat instead. They came with the new uniforms, and they're very hot. Even though I hate this new indoor baseball stadium, and the only reason I can come up with it is because of global warming. And so I think they're like, yeah, it's going to keep getting hotter and hotter. We got to play in some air conditioning now. But yeah, the new blue is very hot. You should get one of those hats instead.
No.
Okay. The next question is from at HuggyBear281. And he has a few questions for you, BFD. And these are all involving the head coach. Why don't you respect the Texans? What have we done that gives us the right to criticize Bill O'Brien? Will O'Brien be fired after next season, or will he last until 2022?
My favorite thing that I saw today was that the nickname given to Bill O'Brien is Houston Garrett. I thought that was great.
Yeah, Houston Garrett's good. Marvin O'Brien's good.
I came up with Marvin O'Brien. I want my props for that one.
You can call him Bill Fisher.
Yeah. He's never going to go away. It's going to take 10 years. It's going to take, it would really take 10 years like Marvin Lewis did, like Jeff Fisher. It's going to take like this extended period of just pure mediocrity for something to finally happen. I mean, at some point, you really can't just say, you know, this 9-7 season was great. We were 10-6 this year. Fine. You look at the personnel. Should have been better. And then also with some of the moves we made, but we were 10-6 this year and we mortgaged the future. And so you look at the 11-5 team last year, and that's the worst 11-5 team I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's going to take anything less than a complete and total face plant with a healthy team for anything to happen. And even then the excuse is going to come out. We're going to do the Bill O'Brien, the New England Patriots way.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say I don't know. I don't got much to say at all. I would like to, if they were to fire him, if they did malarkey Bill O'Brien. Because remember the malarkey thing happened. It happened like 3 weeks after the season ended. It wasn't immediate. It took some time to sit on it before they did that. But I would like to see Bienman, the Kansas City offensive coordinator.
Oh,
just because
gosh,
I mean, you know, he understands the offense well, he calls the plays. I'm sure he draws up stuff with Andy Reid all the time, and their offense has been spectacular. And nobody really talks about him too. I don't understand that all that much. The next question we have,
I see him everywhere.
but nobody's interviewing him right now at all. He's not going to get a job this year. He didn't get a job last year.
Yeah,
you know,
so, I'm so old. I remember seeing Eric Bieniemy live at CU.
That's awesome.
That's how old I am.
That's cool. The next question we have here is from at Smooth Grandma, and that's with two A's. Bigger offseason need, pass rusher or general manager?
GM. I just don't look. A lot of people say that Bill O'Brien is a great GM, but he really has mortgaged off the future of this team. And I think that there's a lot of bad decisions. A lot of it was because Brian Gain was so bad. And so I get what Bill O'Brien is doing. I can understand. I'm hip. But we need somebody who's going to need to understand how to draft players that are good and not just draft any player that you saw at the Senior Bowl. We need somebody who needs to build this team from the bottom up. And if you're Bill O'Brien, and if you're already the head coach, the offensive coordinator, you're the, you pop the popcorn in the morning and you're the head janitor and you park cars before the game, you need somebody who can find those guys at the fourth, fifth, sixth rounds. And right now, I don't think we've got anybody in the front office that can do that sort of thing. And it sure as hell isn't Bill O'Brien. We need a GM. We need a staff in place that can find those guys because we have no draft picks. We need to be successful at the bottom of the draft. And I don't have any optimism we're going to be good at that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the game thing, too, I think he had an awful offseason. But I wonder how much of that was like they worked together, you know? I wonder how much of it was like some long-term vision they had and whatever. And then O'Brien realized, oh, wait, Matt Khalil's our left tackle still, and the season starts in 2 weeks, and I can't trade to Jadeveon Clowney because I've waited until after the contract extension deadline because Brian Gain wanted him here, and now I have no idea what I'm going to do. So even then, like, I don't even know how bad of a job Brian Gain did considering the circumstance, and we never really got a great answer at all on what happened there between those two and, you know, with that whole kind of power play struggle. I think the Clowney thing is clear, but that whole thing still is very, like, murky to me. It's like that and the whole Brock Osweiler signing. Like, those two things never really made any sense at all. And then everything was conflicting, and except everybody hated each other at all, you know?
Pretty much. Yep.
I do think having Jerome Edwards be great, especially, it's very hard to game plan. It's very hard to come up with an offense week to week, especially when you're doing that and scouting, you know, Vernon Hargreaves or deciding if you're going to make a trade for Gary and Conley or not. And so I think that's a very difficult thing to do. And I think there's just too many, like, he's not an octopus. He's a person. There's only so many arms he has. The next question we have here is from at Uproot Texan. He asked, since Bill O'Brien has the most solid security of all Houston coaches, how much better mathematically is he than Mike D'Antoni and new Astros manager? Also, Bill O'Brien is Kirby, the pink small round thing. Yes or no?
I did not understand any of this. I didn't. I saw his questions. I'm like, huh? Sorry, UT. I don't know.
I guess he's making the joke that the Astros have fired their manager. D'Antoni is going to be fired this
year.
Who's
D'Antonio? I don't even know who he is.
Mike D'Antoni's the Houston basketball head coach.
Oh,
and he's
probably
going to get fired. They don't win a championship this year. So how much better is Bill O'Brien since he's the one with all the job security? It's very funny. I do like the Kirby thing because you can he keeps getting hit and hit. It doesn't matter at all. And then he can just, like, suck up the general manager. Now he's the general manager.
You know, what's the Kirby thing?
You know, he's the little pink guy, and, like, he's in the video game, and you, like, suck up an enemy with a sword, and then now you have a sword. Or you suck up an enemy that flies, now you can fly. It's things like that. It's
cool.
Fun. It's fun. Ask your son. I'm sure he knows. So the last the last question we had tonight was,
oh, wait, is that to me?
Sorry, I don't know. I don't like the memes. I try to stay from the memes. It's like rhyme with cliches. Like, the thing that drives me crazy nowadays too is when somebody describes a football player as a grown man. Yeah, he's 27 years old. He is a grown man. He's been able to bench press 450 pounds since he was 14. He is a grown man. We get it.
Right.
Be better. Right. You know, be better. Right. And then the other question we have here is from Greg, who's a friend of the podcast. He asked, would you be interested, or he's interested in our opinion on the two most beneficial free agent acquisitions for the Texans this offseason. So are there two guys who really, you know, poke your eyes out or really have grabbed your eyes so far this year?
I'm not going to be really picky. Number one, I haven't spent the time yet on that. Like, oh my God, that hurt. Finding specific guys, but we have to get an edge rusher and we have to get a cornerback. That's it. I mean, if we do nothing else. And number three, I would say, is a tight end who doesn't suck, or a tight end that Bob actually believes in. I don't know if that's Waring. It seems like Waring's already done.
I think so, too. You know, I think Waring's too hot for Bill O'Brien. He's too much of a Chad, you know?
Too jealous. Yeah. So I just don't – we need help defensively. We need to spend, like, 8 picks on the defensive side of the ball to not suck. So if we need to go out and spend money, we need to do it there. But that said, Deshaun Watson is almost done with his contract. Laremy Tunsil is going to have all the leverage in the world. So we have to spend our money wisely. We are – that's the thing about the short-term take that Bill O'Brien had with the – in August and during the year, is we're going to run out of money really quickly with the free agents we need to sign. Hopkins, Fuller. Who do you sign? Do you give Fuller all the money because he's the biggest difference in the offense in the history of the universe?
Yeah.
I mean, from the way that you talk about it, you listen to the game broadcast, Will Fuller is much more valuable than Deshaun Watson. I mean, that's a joke.
Yeah.
So who do you give the money to?
No, that's a great point. I think it'd be the funniest thing in the entire world if Tunsil's like, nah, I'm going to go to Minnesota or something like that. I'm going back to Miami. I don't see him doing that at all, but just after everything else, I think it'd be hilarious. The other thing I want to mention about the Tunsil trade too real fast is the Tunsil, of course, the Tunsil trade's great because they didn't give up any current assets it was just like adding him for free this year to this team. But also the argument that, well, first round picks aren't that valuable. You're a fan of the team who's entirely built on first round picks. Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins, Winnie Merciless. The entire team is built around hitting in the first round. And other previous guys like Jadeveon Clowney, Kareem Jackson aren't here at all anymore. But these are, like, the entire team is built around hitting in the first round. And now they're not valuable at all anymore because they get traded away. The two guys I'm interested in are, I love Bud Dupree, mainly because he went from doing absolutely nothing to getting really strong this year. And they used him like Clowney. Like, he made Clowney-ish sort of plays in the interior as a stand-up, kind of like hybrid linebacker. He's been really good as an edge rusher, too. I also really like Arik Armstead. He had his breakout year year. He's long. Yeah. He finally had a great year. And the Texans need an interior rusher. And I think he can play 3-4 defensive end. He can play the 3 technique in diamond nickel situations, too. But those are two guys that I really enjoyed watching play this year. And it'd be cool if Houston could make a run for either of them as well, too.
Yeah. And so what do you do about DJ Reader?
I think he's been gone, like, he's based on what they said.
He's gone.
Yeah.
I think. So we're going to have to sign a lot of – that's the thing. We have a lot of guys hitting at the same time on the payroll.
And that's why they've had so much cap space too.
Yep. Yep. I mean, this is basic stuff you learn just playing Madden, not to let this happen. And Bill O'Brien never played Madden, clearly.
Well, he's too busy watching the film and talking to girls, you know.
Somebody's got to pop the popcorn. Somebody's got to clean the toilets. Okay, when you have every position on a football team, you don't have time to play.
Yeah, the one thing that scares me, though, is the cornerback market's bad. It's like Byron Jones and Chris Harris, who's 33, and James Bradberry, who's like a zone, like cover 3, cover 4 sort of cornerback. There's not much there at the cornerback position again. It's going to be a lot like last year, where like you're just praying for, I don't know. I don't know. You can't do the same. I don't know what they're going to do at the cornerback position next year.
Bradley Roby, what is he going to do? He's going to chase the money.
Somebody's going to pay him $10 million a year, and hopefully it's not Houston. It's probably going to be.
We paid him $10 million a year this year.
Yeah, or I mean, maybe probably even like 12 for like 4 years or something, or 13 right. for 4 years. I bet they resign him. I wonder what happened to Reader's interior pass rushing, too. That's one of the saddest things about the season. Like, after the Chargers game, it's completely disappeared. I don't know if he got tired or if he got heavy. They're still using him the same way. If he's double teamed more, and they're just like, yeah, we're just going to slide our protection to him and block Blackson with nobody because he can't do anything at all. But
right.
I don't know.
Put a speed bump in front of Blackson and he's done.
Yeah, I'm tired. I'm going to go lay down after all this.
Done.
I thought this was going to be fun. It wasn't very much fun. And I think the worst thing about this game, too, it's not that Houston lost. Them losing was expected. But it's that this has been the best version of the O'Brien team. This is like his team. He has his guys here, his talent. It's all accumulated to this team. And the best thing he could do is be fortunate this season. And you have an opportunity where you're up 24-0 against the Chiefs. All the breaks you need to have happen. And you beat them and you get the Titans at home for an all AFC South conference championship game. And you get outscored 41-0 after that. And it's not the loss that sucks. It's just the squandering of an opportunity that's never going to come around again like that. Like, you're never going to get a chance where you're going to have that much luck that fast. And I don't know. It's still unfathomable. It's unfathomable and it's fathomable at the same time. And I'll never get over it. But I'm glad that we can all be blood brothers as Houston friends. And a game that has connected generations now.
That's right.
So,
93.
That's all we have for tonight's show. We'll be back on later this week to do a conference championship preview. We'll be back on next week to do a conference championship review. And the plan from here the entire season is, of course, talk about the postseason. I would like to maybe do an all-pro podcast in the gap between the Super Bowl, maybe, like an awards thing as well. And they'll talk about the Super Bowl. We'll talk about an off-season outline after that game. And the off-season's fast in the NFL. It's Super Bowl 2 weeks, like 3 weeks, free agency, the draft's a month later, and then nothing happens for, you know, 4 months or whatever. But we'll still be here talking. So,
sounds great.
Until next time, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio, and thank you for being on tonight, BFD.
Woo!
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.